Welcome to Cloudlandia, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson.
Well, reunited.
Wow, when you took Thanksgiving off, you really took Thanksgiving off.
That's funny. Are you saying that you showed up for the calls? Because I did too. I thought you were taking. Yes, I thought you were taking the time off.
Well, no, I just checked and it wasn't in my schedule.
I got you schedule. Right. Yeah, isn't that funny that we've had my reflex has been to be here at 11 a.m. Yeah. Isn't that funny?
I had a reflex, but you got overruled almost this morning because I was watching really, really funny takeoffs on Mark Zuckerberg on YouTube. And I discovered the weapon against Mark Zuckerberg is just to make absolute fun of him. You know, that he's a robot. There's about six or seven of them. And humor is his weak point.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's almost like that's the parodies of the stuff. I thought that, though, you know, when he was, especially when he was in the congressional hearings or whatever, on Washington, that was the thing that led me to really say, there's not a single minute of that man's life that I think I would enjoy. Like, can you imagine? I mean, being Mark Zuckerberg, I could not imagine what your day is filled with, you know?
Yeah. Well, I had an interesting, I had an interesting comparison, and I think correct me here if I have mentioned this before, because I found it so interesting. So, you know, anyway, it was a limousine service. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to a driver. He was actually part owner of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about having guests come in on a private jet. He picked him up at the, you know, general aviation at the airport. And mm-hmm. it was Warren Buffett. And Warren Buffett is, you know, 70, 80, you know, is net worth is $70-80 billion. And anyway, and he comes off alone, and he, you know, he's got a briefcase, and he comes up to the driver and he says, mind if I sit in front seat? And they had about three meetings in the city that day. And he says, you know, we're going to be going to a meeting. And he said, I just as soon sit in the front seat and talk to you about, you know, the city and what your take is on the city. And then he would be delivered to, you know, and there would be somebody to meet him on the curb. But no, mm-hmm. but throughout the entire day, from picking him up to leaving him off at the airport to fly back to Omaha, I guess, and not a bodyguard. So he's $70 million. And then I read this article about how the Zuckerbergs, the family, you know, husband, wife, and child, and then the senior CEO officers, they have like 24/7 with literally dozens closer to 100 than to 12, you know, security officials who check out everything days in advance where he's going to be. And and I says, and they're about, you know, if you look at the richest people in the world, they're kind of in the same neighborhood, Warren Buffett and Mark Zuckerberg. And I said, so why does one of them feel he can travel just by himself and not need a bodyguard, and the other one needs, you know, scores of mm-hmm. bodyguards? And I said, it must be something coming from inside each person.
I wonder, I mean, you know, you could argue that too, that there's a lot more interaction where people could hate the you know, the misdirection or the stuff that happens. It feels like more people, billions of people, have a more personal relationship with Facebook, therefore it's got to Mark Zuckerberg than do Warren Buffett. Most people has Warren Buffett has no effect on their life. And I think that people feel like Mark is, that's what I mean about part of not being want to be part of it. Even if you take that Mark Zuckerberg probably, hopefully, had great intention for introducing Facebook to help people connect and to create this great tool for people, which he has. But then for it also to feel like, you know, now that the people that are sharing things on there are being filtered, or some are being favored, or some, you know, there's a lot of polarity. It's like a lot of split, just like the way we're split politically. But I get it. I mean, no, something deep inside, too, you feel like, I don't know that Jeff Bezos feels like he needs all that security either, but.
Well, I don't know that, but I think at any given time in the world, there's a person we hate the most. And like if you do a general consensus on the world, and it's got to be somebody.
And it's got to be somebody. Yeah. And in my observation, it's
and
fleeting.
He qualified. He qualified. You know, you have to qualify on 9 check marks, and he qualified on all 9. Now, whether it was his goal to be the most hated person in the world or not, I don't know. But he really hasn't done anything to not get there, you know. And I mean, Warren Buffett, on the other hand, you know, he's like everybody's favorite grandfather. He goes to McDonald's every morning, drives his pickup truck.
Yes, exactly.
He's got like a 30-year-old pickup truck. And if he invites you into his home and you have to walk through cases of Diet Coke, you know, like Cherry Coke. Cherry Coke, and he's come on in, same house he's been living in forever, and everything. So there are certain images that you give off of yourself, and I don't think that, I don't think Warren Buffett, any of his personal habits have anything to do with how he wants you to think about him, but, one was a billionaire at 20, and the other one didn't really get rich until after 60. I mean, he really, he really went big after about 60. And he's got things, you know, just invest in things where you admire the person, you respect the person, you know, and trust the person and everything like that. And think slowly. Invest in things, you know, that are going to last for a long time.
Yeah, with a durable advantage, moat.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So anyway, but they're interesting polarities.
Yes. Yeah, I look at it, you know, and you say about people, we have a person who's the most hated person at any given time, but it's also very fickle. It's very quick, I've noticed, in observation now. Like, that's something that's unique to Cloudlandia, is the power of the people to cancel somebody. You know, that we've created that whole language of cancel culture that you can, that we
have
all...
Have you ever been canceled?
No, thankfully.
Okay, well, I've never been canceled.
Right, exactly.
So we're in Cloudlandia, you and I. We're in Cloud. Why don't we get canceled? Other people get canceled, but we don't get canceled.
That's right. We haven't done any sort of cancelable offenses. That's really the the thing. We may get canceled. Who knows? You know, I mean, you look at the. I don't know that the justice system can be rigged in that way sometimes. You know, the greatest example of it, Dan, that really got my attention of it was.
I'm just trying to think what it would take for Dean Jackson. What Dean Jackson would have to do to get canceled.
To get canceled.
No, I'm
right.
I'm just going through all my memory banks. I'm like, choo, 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 geez, I just can't come up with any evidence on why this guy should be canceled, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank goodness. But I remember where what really there was a couple of events that were happening all at once. And I've really sort of realized how it's almost like this, that the hive mind, in a way, is what Cloudlandia has enabled. And when you look at about 5 or 6 years ago, do you remember that dentist that caused all that uproar when he killed Cecil the Lion? Do you remember those words?
His hobby was big game hunting.
Big game hunting. And he did it. He went over there with a full like guide and all the authorized way, had his permits and everything like this, and then killed this this lion. And it wasn't when they named him Cecil the Lion, the whole world was in outrage, you know. And it was really that. But the thing is, and I would still love to see anybody show me this, there was not a single mention of the word Cecil the Lion on the internet prior to the day that that guy killed that lion. And ever they were talking about it like he killed this national treasure. And I thought to myself that if this lion was so much of a national treasure and he was known for being friendly and coming up to tour groups and stuff, you'd think that in the 10 years prior to Facebook and social media all being available, that somebody on a safari might have taken a picture or a selfie over the shoulder with Cecil in the distance saying, there's Cecil the Lion. He's the friendly lion. Like somebody would have been this lore of Cecil on the internet. But nobody did any kind of research to see that that was even true. We just all immediately canceled him. And it was really, it was very interesting to me. How
I can give you an example of where that, you know, iconic thing actually existed.
Yeah.
And in, I don't know, 2011, 2012, Richard Rossi invited us to go on a trip to the Galapagos Islands off Ecuador, you know, and we flew to Ecuador, and then we flew to there's one of the islands of the Galapagos has an airstrip, and we went on a boat. But I do remember we were introduced to a tortoise, you know. And the difference is tortoises are actually on land and turtles are in water. And this tortoise was, his name was Gorgeous George, and he was 232 years old. And he had thousands of progeny and was continuing to do so at age 232, you know. So this was a very vigorous long-aged. And now, if somebody killed that tortoise and then made soup out of him and took his head that person would get canceled, rightly so, it's been known forever that this is a very, very special creature.
Yeah.
And I did it. But you're saying this was, and Cecil
and
was entirely created.
Manufactured. Yeah.
But yeah, totally manufactured. Yeah,
there was
totally
a comedian just recently reflecting on it, saying, you know, what are the odds that of all the lions out there that this guy kills the one that everybody goes, wasn't Cecil, was it? It wasn't Cecil, was it? Of all the lions that get killed every year. And, you know, the funny thing was the villagers, you know, they're like, it makes no difference because the lions killed 300 people last year in his village, you know? Just another lion getting killed. It's like, finally.
Yeah, there was a great movie. I remember a great movie about 15, 20 years of two killer lions that just terrorized the building of railroads in Africa. Yeah. And these two just went rogue. These two lions rogue. And it's apparently a true story that got, dramatized and everything like that. But, if you live nearby, you wouldn't think well of lions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other thing is, here's another creation that, nature is a loving, gracious, that we have to be in tune with nature and everything. The only thing I've ever known about nature is that it wants to eat you.
It's brutal. Yeah. It's hostile to life.
Yeah. The number one killer of human beings in history are mosquitoes.
Is that right? Wow.
Oh yeah, it's in the millions every year. People die of it. I mean, mosquitoes, everything like that. But go out in nature without any technology. Go out in nature without any protections, and then see how much you like it. Without any comforts, without any conveniences, go out in nature and see how much you like nature.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
Have you ever done that?
In nature?
No. Did you have a stretch of your life when you were a backpacker and a hiker and a camper?
No, I am known to be an avid golfer. And I've spent a lot of time in nature that way. I mean, I've seen some of the most beautiful, I've been all over the hills of Scotland, and I've been up and down the coast of California.
Yeah, the only time you were in nature in your entire life scene was when you were in the rough on Fairway 6.
That's right. One time I really got in trouble. I got deep in the woods, right. You know what? I'll tell you how funny it was, because there was a great advertising moment. It wasn't me that hit the ball off in the woods this way, but my friend Paul. And we were over in the woods, and in the bush there, it was kind of open a little bit, but there's trees and stuff. You're definitely in the rough. And there's a sign that says, it looks like you could use our help. And it was for the golf academy at the golf club where we were. Call this number and we'll help you straighten out your drive. Like, if you're reading this sign, you need us. I thought, Scott, it's so brilliant, being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It's like it. Like, if you're watching CNN, you miss your fight, sort of. Well, it's really, really interesting, this thing about things being created. And, of course, there's a long history of this, because fiction, the vehicle of fiction, is creating things that never existed. There's been storytellers forever. And, sometimes they're telling stories about things that happen, and then they enhance them, they had raw material to create a story, but they had to enhance it. And then at a certain point, one smart one said, well, why even bother with reality at all? Why don't you just create, something new and do that? So there's a, it probably goes back 100,000 years around the campfire somewhere, and somebody, got a reputation for being entertaining and did it. So my sense is that why should Cloudlandia be any different? There was fictional storytelling on the mainland. Why should Cloudlandia be any different?
Yeah, it's just, and that, I think that's the real issue, Dan, is that the in Cloudlandia, we're at the point now where all of the storytelling, all of the things can look as official as the I don't even want to use the words legitimate or mainstream or what's the right word for media now. The entire media situation is being completely disrupted right now through Cloudlandia. Because everybody's got the same equipment, the same broadcast capabilities, the same software to create the chyrons and the lower thirds and the things that make something look like official news. And it's really
Can I ask you a question? And this is a personal question because each of us has to develop, and I think it has to do with what we believe and what we pass on as a fact. And have you noticed any sort of checks that you have in your thinking? Like you'll see something and where maybe 5 years ago you would take it as fact and pass it on to somebody. Now you've introduced another step or two or three steps. One, before you even believe it yourself, but secondly, before you pass it on to anyone. Have you noticed that there's now a new habit in your...
I do notice that there's definitely an awareness that I know where things are coming from, basically. Like, it's hard to... I have to look to a situation where I'm trying to triangulate things. You look at like even what has been happening with the alleged recounts of the presidential votes in Pennsylvania and Georgia and Michigan. Mm-hmm. Those have been all over the news since. And if you trust, on one side you see news that makes it seem like it's an inevitability that people are going to jail, that there's the biggest amount of fraud that's ever happened in things, that the software is coming under scrutiny, that, all of these things, they're winning. It's just going to be a matter of time till it gets overturned. And then, then the next night on 60 Minutes, the gentleman who was in charge of the secure elections is declaring it the most secure elections they've ever had. And it's kind of, so you even see those things that look like, Rudy Giuliani and those guys were all, looked like they were real hearings, but then you realize if you look closely at them, they're kind of like in hotel ballrooms that look like they're look like they're official hearings, but they're more like sort of dress up press conferences in a way, And so you realize that I still don't know what the official what's what is of what's going on, So,
Well, can I tell you what I think the end game is on this? And it's, we aren't at the end of the end game. Like the Supreme Court wasn't really the end game. The Supreme Court thing was actually a marketing campaign. It was actually a marketing campaign, but it wasn't the sale. You of anyone would know the difference between the marketing campaign and the sale.
I get it.
When you get a check. The sale is when you get a check and it clears. but it still comes back to the Electoral College, that the electors who are sent on the December 14th, this is in the calendar, because the Electoral College are individual electors. So if your state has 21 electoral votes, there are 21 electors who go to Washington. They'll probably do it by Zoom this year, and they each cast their vote, and they're not constrained by who won the election,
They could cast whoever,
Yeah, for example, in 2016, there was about seven people who cast it the other way. And as a matter of fact, there was this big Hollywood celebrity campaign of, you know, actors that I didn't really know, but apparently they were someone who was an actor talking to the electors that they didn't have to elect Trump president. You know, they could be a patriot. They could be a patriot and cast their vote because the electors are actually, I mean, but here's the thing, that they're appointed by the state legislatures, the combination of what's the House and the Senate of the state legislatures. And they can, so ordinarily there would be electors who were, so Biden would have a complete set of electors and Trump would have a complete set of electors. It goes that way. And, you know, the legislatures of the states could send, well, we're not going to send the Biden electors. We're going to send the Trump electors. And that, and this is doable. And the five states that are at issue all have Republican legislatures.
Yes.
And this is the end game. This is the end game. And all this lawsuits and everything else has simply been to suggest to the public that this was an illegal election. This was an illegal, yeah. not the public, but people who are going to be the electors and the state legislatures to give them enough proof. So this is really, and the other thing is that states can decide we're not ready on December 14th to do this. They have to do it by, I think, January 5th. Okay, so they can say, you know, we're still not certain about this, and we can do it. So on the 14th, and unless you get, unless the electors, put in a number that adds up to 538, you know, there's, that's the number of electoral votes is 538, and, 270 wins it for you. And if it doesn't count, it's not an official election until all the state's electors come. So, this is the back of the Monopoly box. You know, I mean, if you want to know how a game is played, turn it over and read the instructions. So
the fine print.
My sense is that all this has been marketing. It's not the sale. The sale is what the legislatures do with the electors for five states, and that would be the.
What do you suspect? Do you have any inklings or think of what's going to happen?
I think it's 60-40 that they'll go along with the election.
Yeah.
These five states, I think it's 60-40. Yeah. I think it's 60-40, but, you know.
I just saw an interesting graphic that.
No, I just want to say that I was asking you the question about things.
Oh.
So I read my internet, my mainland thing is reading, and my internet habit is reading. So I go after articles. I go after articles. But I've got one step I take these days. That I never did before, and that is I read the article and I say, who's the author? And I go to Wikipedia and I say, who is this person? Okay. Uh-huh. And I'll read who the author is. And, you know, for example, anything on the climate or climate warning, you can go on the Wikipedia and I'll tell you what he gets who pays for this guy.
Right.
You know, and when I read an article, I say, okay, so how does this guy make a living? You know, or a woman, you know, how does she make a living? And you go to Wikipedia and you can tell right off the bat, why they're taking the point of view that they're taking. And the one thing is there's no such thing as impartiality.
Yes. That's true.
There is nobody in the world who's impartial on any topic.
Yes.
You favor one over the other, and
yeah,
And you'll communicate that way. Like I am 100% entrepreneurial. You know, I'm 100% entrepreneurial. Give me any issue where it's between entrepreneurism and something else, I'm totally biased.
Yes.
I'm 100% biased towards entrepreneurism.
Yeah, I get that. And that, but yeah, you see, is that they don't even try and mask that now. You know, I mean, that's really the thing, is that it used to feel like the news was at least trying to give the perception of being neutral or balanced or whatever it was, you know. But now that there's so many outlets, it's almost like they have to, shout their voice loud.
Can I tell you when what I would call the polarization happened?
Tell me.
Yeah. It happened when FM radio became very popular.
Okay. When was that? Okay. In the 70s?
Yeah. FM radio became very, very popular. And FM was only local. You know, FM is only local. FM has really, really not as much range as AM. I mean, remember...
No, AM, is it the other way around?
AM, you can still, let's say it's midnight and I go on to the AM station. I can pick up a New York station. I can pick up... Okay. Atlanta, Georgia station. I can pick up St. Louis. I can pick up Chicago. FM, you can never pick up except your, the area that you're living in.
Okay. Oh, okay.
But what happened when everybody switched over to FM? One side of the political spectrum completely abandoned AM radio. Okay. So the liberal Democrats all went to FM. They all went to FM because you had National Public Radio was only FM. The classical music stations were FM. You never had classical music on AM. You know, you never had it. And the reason is because the audience was too big for like FM radio or like classical music could be popular, but on FM, it was just, a contingent. FM was a big city station. It was a big city medium too. It was big cities like New York and everything. AM was, it was a hodgepodge. It was everywhere. And what they did is that it just got vacated. AM got vacated and the other side picked up AM radio, and it was talk radio that, introduce the, so up until FM radio was created, the liberal thinking controlled TV. There were only a few stations, there were only a few stations, and there was only three networks. There was CBS, ABC, ABC, CBS, and NBC. Just three. Mm-hmm. And then talk radio took over, and it was just a vacuum, but there were stations everywhere, and it just got taken over by, I would say, basically conservative as opposed to liberal all over the country. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's true. Very, very hard to find a liberal AM station in the United States. Very, very hard to find a... any liberal who is popular on AM, it's FM satellite. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, you had satellites, and then CNN came in, and then CNN, and then that got reproduced 100 times, the 24-hour news.
Yeah.
That was it. But it was really the switch, the introduction of FM radio that created the polarization in the United States.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And I can remember what had happened because I was in Washington, D.C. I was in the Washington, D.C. area. And all of a sudden people said, oh, you don't listen to AM radio. FM radio is the thing to listen. I said, well, that's really, really interesting. You know, I said,
I kind of like what they're saying on the AM better. Is that?
Well, not really. I mean, I'm just a political junkie, so I'm interested when certain trends start and everything else. And it was FM, the switch over, because all the elites got together with their cozy little local station, you know, and left everything else, everything wide. Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. Mediums get introduced, and one side of the political spectrum is going to go, you know, or the other is going to go. But the liberals, I mean, FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, just put a crunch on radio. He gave these fireside chats and everything like that. And then you had the stations. But there was generally a liberal control of newspapers, magazines, television, radio, until there was a second radio medium created, and then one side of it got, and that's where Rush Limbaugh came from. I mean, he's almost 40 years, Rush Limbaugh, on AM radio. Yeah. So.
Yes.
And then all the gospel, you know, the evangelical religion, and they took over AM radio and.
Yeah,
Grand Old Opry, you know.
And Dave Ramsey, guy. Yeah, all of them.
Yeah.
And built really amazing, Glenn Beck, amazing audiences, right? That's what But now, this is the interesting thing, Dan, is that all of that, those audiences kind of carried into the major radio celebrities were all established prior to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about that, right? Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, all these guys have historically been in the thing and have been carried on. But now the
podcasts entirely new characters. Yeah.
That is exactly it. And anybody can do it.
Oh, yeah.
You don't need any permission.
This is the most democratic, podcasting is the most democratic communication medium in the history of the world.
Yes.
First of all, there's unlimited bandwidth. Yeah. And it's global.
Mm-hmm. It's a pretty exciting time.
Yeah.
And now you're starting to see, this is a perfect little
I'll give you an example. Can I give you an example? So last Wednesday morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, Toronto time, I'm on a podcast with David Bach, who's living with his family in Florence, Italy. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we do and it's 1 hour on Who Not How. David's just a superb communicator. And prior to the podcast, I said, how many downloads do you get, per episode? And he said about 4 million.
Wow. Yeah. Pretty amazing, right? Like you look at that.
Yeah. So he said, when we got finished, he said, I'm really happy with this. He said, I'm really going to push this. You know, Who Not How. And
yeah.
He said, and I'm going to tell everybody, you know, read the book and sign up for a strategic coach. And I said,
yes.
Well, take me back 30 years and tell me what that costs to an hour of prime time reaching. Anytime you're talking to 4 million people, I can tell you it's prime time.
Yeah, exactly. To the entire GTA. That's in the entire Greater Toronto Area at the time, you know, back then. Yeah. You look at it, it's amazing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, this is, so much, so much reach now. So many different people have lots of ways to reach people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's built that over a long time.
But here's the thing. A lot of people have a hard time with it because they still think in terms of scarcity. Okay.
Yes.
You know, and you know, you're competing with nobody.
Right.
Once you get into Cloudlandia, you're competing with nobody. Okay.
Right.
All you're doing is establishing a viewpoint and finding other people who resonate with that viewpoint. That's the only thing you're doing.
You're just discovering. Yeah, that's what it is getting it in front of. And in a way that it's spreadable. I mean, because then it truly is that there's a market for every message, right? And it's
you should call your IP lawyer right now and get that phrase.
That, you know, it's the truth.
There's a market for every message, TM.
Yes. And you look at that and it's just, there's no obstacles now.
You know, if I was an IP lawyer today, I would just say, Dean Jackson, can I just follow you around all day and just I don't want the main thing you're eating. I just want the crumbs that fall under the floor.
Oh, that's so funny, and it, you know. That is funny. I love that. It's just a matter of finding them, you know?
Yeah.
And they find you. I mean, wow.
Well, they do. They do. Yeah. There is a philosopher in 1930s, Wittgenstein, Austrian, very famous philosopher for something or other. But he had this great line. I said, it's probably one of the truest statements I can remember any philosopher saying. He said, the whole universe is organized and held together by family resemblance.
That's funny, isn't it?
He says that things that look like each other are attracted to each other. Things that sound like each other are attracted, and it proves to me that the human brain is not a logic. Human brain is not a logical organism. It's not a rational organism. It's an associative organism. That we have some things in our brain, and we go looking for other things that look like what's in our brain.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah, we can find it now.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only that, do we not only find connections, but we make connections, you know, in other words, that we can actually say, hey, these look like each other. And did they look like each other? No, you just determined that you were going to make a connection. And this is a very difficult thing for people to associate. You mean I make up reality? I said, not only do you make up reality, everybody else makes up reality.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I mean, the whole...
More cheese, less whiskers. Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, that's so true. That's so true. And I said, it wasn't true before Dean said it.
Right. That's right. That's funny. Yeah, this is, I just look at, you know, there's so much, when you see the gathering now of everything, all of these voices, all of these, all these different, you see YouTube now, the voices on YouTube are all people who have come up from the the populace kind of thing. All people who have gone out and built these audiences. But I guarantee you, I know that, you know, the kids of today, the ones up to, you know, in school and everything now, they have no idea who the television stars are of the day, but they know everything about the YouTubers of the day.
Yeah. Well, it's gaming, competitive gaming, internet gaming. I mean, the NFL, if you took the National Football League, you take the National Basketball Association, baseball and hockey, and put them together, they're a dwarf compared to internet gaming.
Yes, that's exactly right. And people do the same. So our Philip is watching YouTube videos of other people gaming. And it was really interesting to hear parents talking about that their kids are not, you know, playing sports or watching. They're not interested in sports, watching NFL or NBA or the things that you're talking about. And one parent saying to the other parent, they're not even playing the game. They're watching other people play the game, right, on these videos. And without any irony that they're sitting there on the couch watching football, or watching other people play the game, right? It's just so funny. Meanwhile, they're having this conversation.
Here's a little thing. I mean, I'm interested because I do follow the professional. Football more so probably than almost any other sport because I played it. You know, like all the sports that are available, I played football, and for the school that the school I played in Ohio and thing, I was a pretty good football player. You know, I mean for the class we were in, I was captain of the team. And everything like that. And I enjoyed it and everything, but I always wanted to be, it was a sport I was good in, but the one I wanted to be good in was basketball, and I wasn't any good at basketball.
Oh, boy.
And so, you know, you're good at something, but you wanted to be good at something else. It's not an uncommon thing in, life. But the thing that I find interesting is that there's a duplicate of the National Football League that's called the Internet League. And there are teams, and there's the 32 teams, and they're internet teams. Okay. And so the Dallas Cowboys, which are the most one of maybe two most highly valued sports franchises in the world, the Yankees, New York Yankees, probably one, maybe Manchester United, in football, British football, might be. So anyway, next to Cowboy Stadium in Dallas, they build another stadium that seats 30 or 40,000 people, and people go and watch the fantasy football on the screen there.
Wow, that's crazy.
And the Cowboys own it.
Wow. That's crazy. You mean the video game?
None of their
football?
Games. Yeah, but here's the thing. People will actually go when they can go, but none of those games get canceled because of COVID.
Right.
All the players show up, because they're sitting somewhere. They don't have to be in the stadium to play the game, and everything. So it's it's fantasy football. Essentially, it's fantasy football, but they've made it into a visual game. You have the players and everything like that. And the players are controlled by the participation of the viewers.
Hmm.
And it's unpredictable.
Yeah, right. Wow. I mean, this is all underworld stuff that you don't even realize is happening, you know? But I did find this week, or a couple of weeks ago, a company called Night Media, who they're the company behind the top YouTubers. They've got this collection.
Yeah, I've heard of Night Media.
Night Media. They've got Mr. Beast, and he's the second most popular guy on YouTube, and many other of the top 10, all the ones that basically have 10 or more million subscribers are all basically part of this management group who behind the scenes, do all of the stuff, allowing the YouTubers to really be the visionaries. They're tapping into the vision. It's the VCR formula of the vision of the creative paired with the capability farm of the Night Media, and with the reach then cumulatively of all of those channels together. It's pretty amazing to see what's
happening. What the restriction is in all this? The restriction is the same in Godlandia as it was in the mainland.
What's that?
Human brain can only concentrate on one thing at a time.
Yes. And to that, there's something there's something about
that. And that's
that.
A good thing.
Yet we're also incapable of it.
And that's a good thing. Yeah, and that's a good thing in the sense that it forces everybody who wants to capture someone's attention, they have to look at things from inside that person's mind you can do anything you want, but it's no guarantee that someone's going to pay any attention to you.
That's true.
You have to have some sort of insight into what that person is, and they have things they know that, you can use, sexual images or dangerous images and everything. But a lot of people train themselves out of that, or they just filter that out. People said, I get so scared watching movies like this. And I said, you know how I handle it? I don't watch them. And they said, Oh, but you're missing. Well, I said, what I'm missing is being scared. Right? I said, I choose to miss being scared. I said, I scare myself with goals. I don't scare myself with other people's input.
Right. That's brilliant. That's kind of the thing when, you have been perhaps more than anybody that I know, more monofocused, I think, than most in a lot, in every way, I think, in observation. But I'd love to hear more. Were you always that way, or was there a time when you know what? The only thing I'm going to do is focus on this one thing.
I think it was an accident too. Think it's an accident. I think it's a function of when I was born, where I was born, my birth order, who my parents were, that as a child, I spent a lot of time alone.
Yeah.
Even though I'm one of seven in a family, I have a significant age differences on, older and younger. I have, and so I never played with my siblings. As a rule, I mean, I would play with them, but that was like dessert. That wasn't the main course.
Yeah.
And there were no kids in the neighborhood. I grew up on a farm. We were out in the country. So from probably the time I walked until I hit first grade, there was about a three, four-year period when I could just wander a 100-acre farm.
Yeah.
And I couldn't go, I couldn't cross a fence line, and I couldn't, you know, I couldn't go anywhere near the highway. But
right.
I could pretty well wander, you know, wander around in the paths and everything like that. And there was a dog. We always had a dog, and the dog always came with me. And my mother said, I don't want to know what you're doing when you go out of here. So don't come back and tell me what you're doing, because I don't want to think about it.
Wow. Okay. That's how she chose to not scare, scare herself.
How's that
right.
for a free Dean, how's that for a free pass?
Yeah, exactly.
But she said, if you get into trouble, we know the dog will come back and bark and we'll find you.
Wow. That's great.
It's simple. But what it did is that I don't want that to happen. I don't want to get into trouble. So the dog goes back and barks. And they have to. So it was kind of this an agreement between me and my parents, you know, that I could wander. But when I was three or four, you know, I would wander down the path, and it was, you know, like a half mile to the back of the, you know, to the back of the territory, back of the property, you know, and I'd wander, and then, you know, there wasn't really anything dangerous except machinery. You would, you know, they want me fooling around with tractors and things like that. But, you know, but I think I got into the habit of sort of entertaining myself and educating myself really early. And I think it was, you know, that's where my brain was when I hit school at six. And then we lived 6 miles away, so you were delivered in time for school and you were picked up from school. So there was no socializing afterwards, you know.
Right.
So I didn't hang out with the kids. That wasn't part of the social scene.
Right.
So, and I, you know, it was that just happened to be the card deal that I got, and, you know, and I did that. But I've noticed all my life that, you know, if people describe me, you know, Dan's about what Dan's about, you know, my, you know, if you ask my, well, Dan's always kind of doing his own thing, you know, like ever since I've been a kid, and you ask anybody, and I remember I was at a high school reunion, my high school class, 25 years ago. I haven't been back since. And there was a group sitting around. It was in one person's home. And we were sitting around, and they were talking about things that had happened, you know, like teachers getting fired for fooling around, you know, with the students and everything like that. And I was sitting there, and I said, God, this is all news to me. I said, I didn't know any of that. You know, it's, I didn't know any of that. And I didn't do that. And one woman, you know, who I grew up, she says, Dan, you know what our image of you was? You were just waiting for the, you were just waiting to leave town.
Just waiting. I'm only, I'm only passing through.
I'm putting in my time. I'm just, you know, I'm just putting in my time before I can leave town. And I left town three days after I graduated from high school. I was gone, you know.
Isn't that amazing?
And never went. So, you know, you are who you are. And the big question is, one is to be okay with that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm okay with the way I am, and, you know, and I'm okay with, and I'm okay with the way other people are, you know, because I think a lot of it's luck, and a lot of it is created along the way. You know, you have something you start with, and then you build on it.
Yes, agreed. Yeah.
Well,
imagine, you know, you think about your, I mean, just thinking about the way you grew up, that it wasn't even an option for you to be in your room connected to the rest of the world as a,
I didn't see television until I was 9 years old.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
53.
Yeah.
I mean, it was radio. We had radio, but I was a big reader. My mom got me out of reading really early.
Sure.
So
I love
it. And, you know, like I was just talking to somebody and they said, you know, this is about Facebook or Twitter or something like that. And I said, and they were saying, you know, how do you handle Facebook and Twitter? And I said, I don't. No. I know you don't. So, but and I said, no, I've never had the experience of receiving or sending a Facebook message or a Twitter message or any of the other social media.
Yes.
And they said, how can that be? And I said, well, I don't do it.
Right.
Yeah. And but I read a lot and, you know, I'm a news junkie, you know, so I'm aware of things in the world. It's just that I choose not to participate. And, you know, it's like you can't get a hold of me unless you go through somebody else.
Right. Yes. Well, and I get sucked every week, just like this.
Yep. And aside from you, my phone is unused.
This is great.
Except for Happy. I've got my Happy app now. And the app is on my phone. So for the first time ever, I'm charged up all the time. I make sure I'm charged up all the
time. Your phone's charged up. Oh, boy, that's great.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, Dan, this has been fun.
Oh, yeah. But you know,
I'm
we should
happy to be back.
You know, there's a lot of things about this new world that are threatening because people have always lived in a world of scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, if you want to be scared about something more than scare, if you want to be scared of something that's scarier than scarcity, try abundance.
Wow. Yes, exactly.
Abundance is really scary.
Yes. I think that's really,
what do you mean?
It really is.
What do you mean it's infinite?
I think that the abundant, where this is really like hitting home, is the abundance of availability of capabilities that we truly, you know, I've mentioned that we're moving into this, that being the ability to define what you want, which is vision, is really, that's the thing that people are, that's the scary thing, is to realize that you can want bigger and more amazing things and there's nobody stopping you. I mean, Exhibit A is Elon Musk. I want to send a man to Mars, you know, and there's nobody, you know, the capabilities gather themselves in a way when you're clear on the vision. Yeah.
Yeah. So last week, here's a thing to talk about, both Elon Musk and, both, Tesla essentially. And the person himself and Oracle moved from California to Austin, Texas.
Yes.
They both announced. And, you know, I don't know what it takes to get the attention of California politicians, but I would suspect that this is, you know, it's a bit of a message. We can talk about that. Where are you going to live in the mainland? If you're going to take advantage of Cloudlandia, where do you want to live in the mainland?
That's exactly right. The big buzz in Texas now is their slogan is "Don't California Texas."
Yeah,
they don't want all these people abandoning California for Texas.
Well, first of all,
turn Texas into California.
Yeah, check your mindsets your mindsets at the border. You know, we don't. We'd like your skills. We'd like your consumption, but we don't want your mindsets.
That's exactly right, and that's the thing. Florida and Texas are, you know, the beneficiaries of this. We're gaining a lot of new people. So, so many opportunities.
Yep.
All right, Dan. I'm happy to be back in the the saddle. I'm happy to be back in the club chair here, having the conversations. And I will, I'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.